Welcome to the Gateway Podcast, where we get a chance to sit and talk to the outstanding professionals who serve in the 37th Training Wing. I get the privilege to host this podcast and serve as Warhawk Nation's Command Chief. So, without further delay, let's jump into it. As a reminder to all listeners, all topics discussed are unclassified, and the views expressed by our guests and hosts are not necessarily the position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or any government agency. Welcome to the Warhawk Podcast. I'm Chief Carlos Francisco Damian, the Warhawk Chief. I get the opportunity to be that at least for the next few months. I got probably about another year in the seat. And one of the things I'm going to miss is the ability to walk down to feel a little bit enthusiastic about some stuff. And that enthusiasm comes from some of the world-class recruiters that we have here in the 37th Training Wing, by way of the 37th Training Group, by way of the 344th Training Squadron, our recruiters who train the new recruiters to do some recruiting. A absolutely thankless job, I would say, that's really, really difficult. Some folks who may want to be there, may not want to be there, for just speaking the truth. So I have three amazing superstars with me here today, and I'm going to turn it over to them for them to introduce themselves.
How's it going, Chief? Always good to see you. I'm Tech Sergeant Jefferson with the United States Air Force, of course. First name, Nathan. Come out of Prince George's County, Maryland. If you don't know, it's about Washington, D.C., about 10 minutes. And I'm an instructor right now over at Lackland Air Force Base, enjoying it. Probably the best job in the Air Force. Before recruiting, I was security forces. It's pretty predictable when people start talking to me.
The second I walked into your classroom the very first time, I was like, oh my goodness. I'm not just saying this so everybody, I'm glad we don't have a video on air so they will see the crush that I have, but you are absolutely phenomenal. I mean, your presence is just, and you can't necessarily teach presence. Maybe I may be wrong. You may be able to do that, but phenomenal. I was inspired the second I saw you teach and the second I saw you get on the, get out there in the lectern. Ma'am, over to you.
Hi, Chief. My name is Master Sergeant Dorsilla Davis. I am originally from Germany, but I joined the Air Force out of Honolulu, Hawaii, which is what I claim is my hometown. I am the flight chief of the recruiting schoolhouse. And before I was a recruiter, I was in services.
Services.
Yes.
You want to be a recruiter? Did you, volunteer to her?
I did.
Is it you came a recruiter for DSD?
I did. I was one of the first groups or rounds of individuals selected for DSD back in 2014.
So we're going to pull on that a little bit. So you say you claim Honolulu. You led with Germany, but then you went straight to Honolulu. So what happens there? What is the thing? Are you a brat or are you just your parents international travelers? You're an international traveler. How'd that work?
I'm originally from Germany, lived there until I was about 10, and then mom remarried and all that. And then we eventually ended up in Hawaii. So I spent most of my teenage years there, and that's where I joined from.
What high school did you go to?
Moanalua High School.
Okay. So shout out. Mm-hmm. Shout out.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. We have probably the most nervous person I've had on a podcast. No, I'm kidding. You're an absolute, if you meet this individual, you feel like you've known him forever. I don't know, he's probably one of your cousins and one of the loudest cousins you have for sure. And most opinionated cousins. So over to you, teammate.
That's very true, Chief. So I am Master Sergeant Fernie Rivera. My hometown is, I'm from Medellin, Colombia. So it's down South America, but I joined out of New York City. My prior AFSC was medical logistics. And I've only done that for like 4 years in my entire Air Force career life.
You've been a recruiter for that long?
I came into recruiting as a young senior airman. I only have been in the Air Force for like about 3 years when I became a recruiter.
Get out of here. Is that before DSD?
Yes, I was way before DSD. I volunteered to become a recruiter. And at that moment, as a senior airman, you had to get a waiver because they weren't accepting senior airmen, but they were trying to plus up like 500 recruiters at that moment. So I got lucky.
So you got lucky.
And here I am.
Right person, right time, right?
Yes, sir.
Talent management for yourself?
Yes, definitely.
And you're in Colombia?
Yes, sir.
When's the last time you went back home?
Last year.
Last year, where'd you go?
Medellin.
I never been, but we went to Bogota a few months back. I love it. We used to fly in there quite a bit, actually.
Okay.
We do a lot of international missions out there, but here in 37 Training Wing, I didn't think I would have a TDY out there, and we did, and it was absolutely phenomenal. What a beautiful place, except for the elevation. The elevation gives me a headache. What if you get that?
Okay. What do you think about the weather?
What's that?
The weather.
Oh, it was great. Well, we were there for about a little over a week, and it was Oh, phenomenal. Phenomenal. All right. So what you guys, what are you guys into? What are your thing when you're not recruiting, when you're not clapping those hands and saying, boy, am I enthusiastic? What are you into? What's your go-to stuff? Hobbies type?
Traveling. I love to travel. Anywhere I could go, I take that opportunity to just go. We were just in Boston 2 months ago.
Where'd you go in Boston?
Where?
Yeah.
So just in the Boston area, we ended up going to, I got my son tickets to go watch the final. The Celtics final game.
Oh,
the championship.
You're a good dad.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So we were up there for like 4 days. We did the whole touristy thing, but the main thing was to be up there to watch the NBA final.
Anywhere in particular you went to Boston, you go to, you do the tourist thing, go to like Faneuil Hall?
So I was stationed in Boston before.
Okay.
So while we were stationed there, we didn't do the touristy thing, but now we did.
Okay.
We did do the Boston Tea Party Museum, the USS Constitution, which is up there too. It was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Right there. It's on Charleston.
Yep.
Charleston,
it is.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Hey, so you were stationed in Boston. When were you stationed in Boston?
When?
Yeah.
2016 to 2019.
Nope. I just missed you. I was in Cape Cod.
Okay.
Yes, there's a base for all those Air Force people. Well, if anybody's listening out there, like if you're taking any type of nuggets of information out there, yeah, you can go to Boston. And if you go to Boston, where do you park?
So for us, we got smart and we parked at the Coast Guard station.
Yes, that's what I was like. That was your test. That was actually a test because I was like, just make sure you weren't lying. So all the military people out there listening, if you need to park somewhere in Boston, and if you've ever been to Boston, you know there's no parking. And if it's you're parking somewhere, it's like $1 million. I'm not trying to get everyone to join the Coast Guard, but park on the north end, go to the Coast Guard, and you are right there in the heart of everything.
Yep.
All the great... Yeah, Copley Square. Oh, I love
you could walk right there. Quincy's right there. The Quincy Market. So yeah,
oh, just the Quincy Market. Yeah.
And then it's like, what, maybe 10 minutes from the stadium?
Yeah, that's where we used to walk to TD Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. You go, if you, you know, you're feeling brave, you can walk across the bridge and go to Chucktown too, or Charlestown. They make movies about that. Ben Affleck. Shout out to Ben Affleck. So what are you up to? What are you into, Carl Davis?
For me, I've been just embracing the mom life. My daughter, she's almost 7. She'll be 7 next week, and she's starting to get to the age where she wants to hang out with friends more than her parents. So I've been just holding on tight to that and trying to do as much with her as I can. So
does she still hug and kiss you in public, or does she now give you a side? Does she give you the side of her body?
Since the last couple of weeks since school started, I've been able to walk her in and I'm like, can I hang out with you a little bit? And she's like, no, time for you to go. So it's, I can feel it slowly starting and I'm holding on.
It comes and goes.
It does.
Yeah. And you gotta embrace it as mm-hmm. much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. What about you, kind sir?
It's football season.
Oh, what's your team?
Go Pack Go. Go Pack Go.
Oh, like Pat, like the Patriots?
Like the Packers.
Oh, Packers.
Oh, yes, sir. Not to be confused.
Oh.
Yes.
Where did you say you were from again? Remind the audience.
Washington, D.C. area.
And not necessarily a Commanders fan.
Not at all.
Not a Baltimore Ravens fan.
Not at all. How'd that happen?
Yeah. Why? Yep.
I started watching football before I knew geography. And when I was 4 years old, Brett Favre was the best person alive.
Oh, yes.
As soon as I saw 4. I was 4. It made sense.
My son was an Eagle. He's an Eagles fan because he liked Eagles. He's like, yep, that's my football team. And he's been a psycho fly Eagles fly fan since.
31 years of being a Packers fan.
So are you excited for this weekend? Do you watch college ball too?
I'm decent on college ball. A fun fact about recruiting is Michael Parsons was in one of my high schools. So I got to actually meet Michael Parsons well before his fame and little experiences as you get in recruiting, only in recruiting.
You ever hit him up to like, hey, let's go do some recruiting events?
Not really, but he did give me a signed football. So that was good enough.
I should use him for some events. So like bring him. Hey, you know what? You know, starting those events, maybe he should come to Warhawk Nation. He'll be here in 37th training. We could host him, let him see the bomb run of a parade field.
He would want to do it.
Let's do it.
Yep.
Let's do it. Let's reach out to Micah Parsons.
Yep.
If you're listening, Micah, we'd love to have you on the podcast, and we definitely like to have you over here in Warhawk Nation.
Absolutely.
So the next question I got is going to be, why you joined? What made you join?
Man, the first thing I think about is my girlfriend was late to pick me up from work. So I just started walking down the sidewalk. And it was an Armed Forces Center just sitting right there. And I just walked in because of boredom, pure boredom. And I was just bored. So I walked in. The first door was the Army. You know, when you go to the barbershop and that first barber's like, hey, let me cut you. And you're like, I know I'm not going to that person. That's exactly no, how thanks. I felt about the Army. He was too hyped. And I was like, nah, I'm good. And then I kept going. Marines were just doing something. I think they were just like exercising, like, you know, normal. And then there was Tech Sergeant Connie Jordan. She was sitting in her office, and I just walked in and I was like, hey, I graduated and I really don't have any direction. I think the Air Force might be something I'm considering. And she made me feel like I was at home. And I think I just always say I was accidentally just put in the Air Force. It was just so comfortable that one day I was just going to basic training. And I walked in there in probably July and ended up going to basic training in October of 2007.
Did that translate her ability to recruit you and sit you down and then make you feel like that? Did that translate into how you ended up recruiting?
Absolutely not. She was just motherly and very empathetic. Empathetic is not one of my strongest traits.
Don't say defenders aren't empathetic.
You know, we try. We try. But I think just pretty much her being there set the standard for, you know, caring about others. So when I was, you know, voluntold to do recruiting. I loved security forces and I was not open to do recruiting. But then when I sat in that office and got to change lives, I thought about her immediately and was like, oh, that's why she was so caring about this situation. So I think that it helped transition to me understanding how to be a recruiter.
Man, top that, Sunday.
I'll try my best.
No, it's not about that. It's not about topping. It's just like, again, the podcast is just sharing stories. I want you guys to feel as comfortable as possible. So we're just having conversations and we hope others listen to it.
Okay. So for me, the reason why I joined it, living in Hawaii, being a teenager, just had graduated high school. There were two things that I wanted for myself. I wanted to be able to go to college and I wanted independence. Cost of living in Hawaii was very expensive.
Is it expensive? That's why I hear. I know.
Especially when you're 18 years old. There was no way I was going to be able to move out of my mom's house and be able to go to school. So with military influence being very strong in Hawaii, my mom's closest friends were all Air Force. And one in particular influenced my mom to walk us down into the recruiting office. And basically she said, you're joining the Air Force. So it took me, I think, a year to actually leave. I backed out of two different ship days. So I was like a recruiter's worst nightmare because I just couldn't.
You should see their faces right now. Her two teammates here, their faces. Oh, it's painful looking.
I'm very lucky that my recruiter gave me a third chance and I finally shipped off to basic training and I did everything I wanted education wise. So had I not, I was actually going to separate after my first enlistment. I got accepted to go to law school in Charleston where I was stationed at the time. But then when I got the opportunity and got picked up for recruiting through DSD, I really wanted to take advantage of that opportunity because I still love the Air Force. And had I not been picked up for recruiting, I probably wouldn't be in the Air Force right now. So.
Are you an Esquire right now too? Are you a lawyer on the side?
I am not. I tried to do law school and being active duty at the same time, but it was just the circumstances at that time. It was difficult.
What law school was it? The College of Charleston?
It was, yes. And then when I was in California, I did my first year at in Orange County, California. But then having
what school?
It was Western State.
Oh, Western State. Mm-hmm. I was gonna say you're not gonna say Chapman University, are you?
No.
That's my alma mater.
My husband started nursing, or he went there, I think, for nursing school. So
really
familiar with that school as well.
Oh, me too. Irvine, California. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Irvine. Mm-hmm.
That's where we lived, in Irvine. That's funny.
See how this world is? Mm-hmm. You could have recruited me right now. You're like, see how we have commonality? You should fill out this paperwork. Okay, here we go.
Oh, why did I join?
Yeah, why?
So growing up in Colombia, we were poor, but everybody in Colombia is poor, so you don't know you're poor.
Yep.
We moved to New York City when I was about 13 years old, and that's when we realized we were poor, right? So throughout my teenage years, I've been homeless. I grew up in an alcoholic family, abusive family, and I was a troubled youth, right? And then for a while there, to be honest with you, I was also illegal. So we were working on getting our green card. So I was just doing random jobs, anything I could do to survive. Finally, when I got my green card, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to join the services. So my first choice was the Navy. I'm like, I'm joining the Navy. They get to travel, be on a ship. That sounds amazing. Well, I had an appointment with the Navy recruiter and he stood me up.
What? So that's a cardinal sin for you.
It is. As a recruiter, you never stand up your appointments. So as I'm walking out the building, I pass right by the Air Force office, and I see Tech Sergeant Gritz at that moment just sitting there having a good time. And I'm like, hey, dude, can I talk to you? And we had an honest conversation, and he was very honest from day one. And that's why I ended up joining the Air Force. So I like to tell people, like, if it wasn't for the Air Force, I'd be either 25 to life or 25 feet underground. And so my recruiter changed my life.
So what are you working on right now? As your life has consistently changed, I mean, you've gone from, you know, your medical logistics to recruiting. You're working towards goals. What's your next goal? What's your next thing you want to do with your life?
Well, I'm at that point where I'm very close to retirement. So once I do hit that button or decide to retire, it's just, I don't know, find an easy job and relax. Enjoy the rest of my life, you know, travel.
I tell people that same thing. I was like, I just don't want to supervise anybody. And it's not that this is not a great job, of course. And this is by no means a knock on what I do or my profession or what I've chosen to do. But when I get out, I'm going to be cool, like working at Safeway. And then shout out to all the people who work at Safeway too, by the way. But just something where I can just relax a little bit too. So that definitely sounds appealing.
I always joked around I was going to be a Walmart greeter.
Yeah.
Just say hi to people and bye.
I love saying hi to people too. Mm-hmm. And now you're super enthusiastic and you get a chance to, you never know. And then they're going to snatch you up to go do recruiting for Walmart.
I'll do it.
What about you? What are you working on? What goals? Is there anything you're working on towards? Because you had me at Esquire at Lawyer for a while.
Yes. It's funny because at the time when I was in law school, you couldn't have an online option. But now with COVID and everything, now there are options to go to law school online. So I've been looking at doing that. But then also being pregnant at the moment, this is my number one goal, is just to, you know, have a healthy pregnancy and get through that. And then being new in my current position, I just got here in December. So just continuing to learn about, you know, my role here and developing.
Oh, we can cut this next part out too, if you want. You know, you don't have to share, we can cut all this. And I'm looking at our editor here. You know what you're having?
I do. Yes. A girl. So I'll have two girls.
Two girls. You can have a boy. You're going to try for a boy?
We're done after this one.
That's it?
We're done.
That's it? You don't want to have the beauty of the nature of having a boy that, like, the all boy, they walk into walls and they just grunt.
I'm scared to have a boy.
Really?
Yes.
Not a girl, a boy.
Yes, I'm scared. You know, I feel like girls are a lot easier in the way that they're, at least with my daughter, she's been very easy to raise, very safe. I feel like boys do a lot of crazy things that would just make my anxiety go up like a lot more.
I think all things being equal, when you get a wild child, I have five children. Mm-hmm. When you get your wild child, it's just going to come. Mm-hmm. It's just boy, girl, left, right, up, down. Mm-hmm. They're gonna give you a run for your money.
Yes. Yeah, so my algorithms on like Instagram, they're all just showing videos of your first child is the calm one. And then the second one is the wild one. So I'm already panicking like, oh my gosh, what are we going to be dealing with? But we're excited.
I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
What about you? What are those goals right now? What are you looking at? What are you looking at doing?
Man, you know, it's funny because I would say probably around my 15 year mark is when I actually got re-blued. I went through a time in the Air Force where I was just floating. I was a leaf. Like wherever I blew, I just did it. I didn't really have too much passion into what I was doing. I kind of lost it, and it kind of been like COVID, I want to say. But around my 15 year mark, I was in a work office that just changed my life. Not to go into too much detail about it, but it made me just kind of re-blued me. It had nothing to do with like the Air Force. It was like personal level. So it like, through all my, I see myself in this many years, threw a wrench in it, changed everything. When I came here as an instructor, when I said the best job in the Air Force, I really mean that. And being down here as an instructor, it's changed it to, you know, some people have a countdown to when they retire, like that 20 year, they have their phone set up with a timer that says, I'm hitting the button that day. Well, mine started panicking, like, I'm not ready to get out. So I started thinking about actually what is life after 20 years. I started thinking about those things, and then I started falling in love with San Antonio. So I'm at this part where it's either, I got two destinations at this point, either become a flight chief and lead some recruiters to meet that goal, or become a San Antonian, go to all the Spurs games and give me a good
They got Wemby now.
I'm 6'2". I stood next to him. I came to his elbow. He's a tall dude.
So you're 6'2". I'd stand next to him. I'm like a hip bone, his iliac crest, if you will.
Yes, sir.
So you're kind of in the mixed, kind of free floating right now.
It's a 5-year that got two avenues. I'm just waiting for, I'm real firm on when something happens. It's like, that was what I was supposed to do. So
true. You know how it all, I think for everybody in the room, I'll say it probably went some way like that, but I would have never known that from you. I would have never known that you were at one time a Leaf, but you, again, that's why we do podcasts like this and talking, you know, as the Hawaiians like to say, is talk stories, right? Like that's a thing that we do in the Air Force, is sharing these things and sharing these experiences. We are unique. Like 25, it's pretty interesting. Then look at you now. Is your family proud of you?
Yes, sir. I was the first one to break that vicious cycle of alcoholism, abuse, homelessness. I mean, my family thinks I'm rich. I'm like, I'm not rich. I just did something with my life. So yeah, they're super proud of me of what I do. And I'm the first one in the family to ever join any branch. And then now I have cousins and nephews who all decided to join because following my steps and see how good I have it.
That's one of the things, I don't know if you guys see that. I'm sure you guys see it quite a bit as recruiters, is you get the, you know, hey, my cousin, my uncle. But, you know, that's how our family immigrated to the United States, is through the United States Navy. And what I see a lot of is I see folks, and it's always inspiring me. Like, you went to graduation this morning, and I know that maybe somebody with a socioeconomic background that's not robust, you know, they either grew up in the, you know, in the farms or country, or they say a trailer to a right there in the hood, they get a chance to change their lives. They get a chance to be a Leaf for a little bit. They get a chance to go out there and do those things, and then capitalizing on that side of the house on recruiting. What's the hardest thing when it comes to recruiting, and that you saw that you faced maybe the first couple years?
I think the hardest thing for majority of recruiters is learning that you can't help everybody. That's the hardest part, is that you, as a recruiter, you wish you could put the whole world in the Air Force if you could. And sometimes you have to say no, but the audible on that is, at least I used to always say, not everybody that comes in your office is joining the Air Force, but everybody leaving your office should be having a better day at minimum. Yeah. So maybe you can't come in the Air Force today, but did I at least give you an application to go work somewhere else? Did I give you a resource if you wanted to lose weight to get into qualifications? Did I give you a resource to go work out somewhere? So you might not join the Air Force today, but hopefully you're better tomorrow because of what we did. And I think a lot of recruiters take that home. They just like, I couldn't help that one person.
Wow. I never thought about that before. I thought that answer was going to be a lot different.
That's exactly the same answer, really? I would have.
Is, wow.
Sometimes, because I think that's the biggest personal gain that we have from recruiting, is we, you firsthand get to impact and change the lives of people. You get people that come to your office that are homeless, that don't know where they're going to go tomorrow. And you just want to be able to help, sometimes to the detriment of ourselves being able to make goal, because we invest so much time and energy into wanting to help everyone. And like Sergeant Jefferson said, sometimes we can't help everyone. So it becomes hard on us, right? For me, my personal thing was always, I'm from Germany originally, so I joined the Air Force as a non-US citizen. We all know that if you're not a US citizen, it significantly limits the number of jobs you can do in the Air Force. So if you want to make goal, you need to have people that are highly qualified. But for me, I'm like, those are my people. Like, I'm not going to turn people away just because of their citizenship. But I knew if I was going to take that approach, I have to have that many more people that are highly qualified. So it's just being able to balance it, right? But that was always my hardest struggle.
And you bring the recruiting students out to the Airman's Coin Ceremony, right?
We do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what do you think about that that ceremony? Because to me, I don't know if it just resonates with me, you know, being a child of, or of immigrants that join the service to gain their citizenship, and like how many different aunts and uncles, nieces, nephews, cousins, steps, and in-laws that we've had that joined the service since. But that ceremony, what do you think about it? Have you,
I cry every time I go. I can know no person that's actually graduating, and it still hits me. Like, it's very emotional. It is. It's a very beautiful ceremony to watch, and just you as recruiters, we firsthand see like, okay, these are people that walked into our office, right? Knew nothing about the Air Force, and look how much they've grown in their airmen now. And then you see their families and how proud they are of them. It's a special moment.
Yeah. I love that. And I love the citizenship, like when they become United States Air Force citizens. So for the listeners out there, we have during our Wednesday Airmen Coin and Retreat Ceremony. Right before that, here in the United States Air Force, you're allowed to, if you meet all the qualifications, become a U.S. citizen. Prior to, you actually march out and you say your Airman's Creed for the very first time. And it says, I'm an American Airman. And it's at that time, it can be the most truest thing. And I think it resonates maybe a little differently with some folks. Mm-hmm. So what was some of the hardest things, or you can elaborate on that too, if you want, or
it was, my thing was when I came in into recruiting, I was a baby senior airman. I'm not going to lie to you. I was that leave. I was ready to get out of the Air Force. And where I worked in the warehouse, cause I was here at Big Willie, Wilfred Hall. We had a sign in, sign on board. And every day I would put in how many days I had left in the Air Force.
There's your countdown. There it is.
I had it. And then I had a commander who pretty much re-enlisted me, got me to join again without even me knowing that he was recruiting me. So when I went out into the field as a recruiter, I made staff in recruiting, and I was just getting a pay raise. I was about to get a $500 pay raise. And this was back in 2009, 2010, when the economy crashed. And so there were people in front of me who had just lost everything. And I'm getting a $500 pay raise, and I couldn't put them in. For whatever reason, I couldn't pay them, and I fell for them. And I'm like, man, like this is horrible. Like, what are you going to do? So with that being said, I ended up putting more people in the Army than I did in the Air Force. Because if they couldn't join us, somehow, one way or another, we were able to get them into the Army.
Yeah.
But I did. I had a young man who was homeless. And he would walk 2 or 3 hours to come to my office to do my appointments, and I just couldn't get him in. And it hurt. It was hard. So, yeah, it was just not being able to put everybody in that you need, that you know deserve to be in. And you knew that by being in the Air Force, it was going to make their lives better, but you couldn't do anything for them.
I'll tell you, my first flight in way early 2000s, like right after the 9/11, So as you guys are talking about it, I think every one of you hit on the homeless portion of it, of folks coming in. It's unmistakable. Back then, I don't know how it is now, but as a young staff sergeant, you receive your flight, you're yelling, you're doing the things, you're picking bags up, putting them down, all that stuff. And this is my very first flight solo by myself, no MTI trainer, hanging out with me. It's just you and 60 human beings. And with that, I see the recruiter backpack, like back then it was like the Aim High, and it was a certain color backpack, and some folks had it, some folks didn't. And I see this young man with it. I see his hair extremely messed up. I'm yelling, I'm going up there, and he passes me, and I notice that all he had, and I think a lot of recruiters, a lot of us can understand this. He had like a rusty old duffel bag that was all ripped up, and trash bags, like literally double bag trash bags. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how am I supposed to? Because you have to fill these baggage tags out. And I was like, is that your trash? I kind of knew, and you have the emotional intelligence, when to throttle up and throttle back. Again, it's the first night, but I never will forget that. I'll never forget him. I'll never forget what it was like to graduate that individual. Mm-hmm. So I'm very thankful for these three people in front of me that allow. It's funny how, like, because you have a certain rank or you're a certain position, you think that you're influencing other people a whole lot, but never miss the opportunity to have those individuals influence you. Mm-hmm. I still talk to him to this day. I won't say his name because I'm not quite sure he's comfortable with me sharing his name with that story, but he is still in the United States Air Force. And I will tell you that he is, this year, we know it. I know it to be true. He's going to be a Chief Master Sergeant. In December, I'm hoping his name is written on that list because I think he's long overdue.
Giving me chills.
Yeah. But you put him in. Mm-hmm. You put them in. You sacrifice and, you know, you dig deep. And that is that's the beauty of our service. That's the beauty of what we do here. So that's inspiring to me. What else is out there inspiring you? What is something out there music, books, you guys have anything that you're into right now that's like, I'm really on this right now. Anything inspiring you, a podcast or anything? Other than the Warhawk podcast?
For me, it's my son. My son's going to be 14 on Saturday. And I still got that thing with him where, like, we still do a lot of things together. So we do a lot of sports. We go out to sporting events. He has his own sports. So he's keeping me busy. That's like my life right now.
What kind of sports?
So right now he's in football, but he also plays basketball. Unfortunately, he decided not to do soccer. And I'm like, the family tradition, there it goes. But he does football, basketball. He did track. So he does all the sports. So that's the thing with me. Like right now, it's just me and him enjoying life. We do stuff. You know, he likes on the weekends, we go to Andrade. We go do go-karts. I'm trying to get him to go skydiving, but he's still not into that.
What's Andrade's?
Andrade's the it's a indoor go karts. They have the arcade. They have like laser tag in there. It's where's right there. 1604 and I-10, right next to iFly.
I don't know where iFly is at.
Right next to Topgolf, if you know where that is.
I know where Topgolf is.
Okay, they're all in the same area, yeah. And then, like I said, we just travel a lot every year. We take at least 2 vacations in the summer.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What's out there inspiring you? What do you? You had time. You had time to think about this.
I did. The only thing I thought about was my daughter. I literally, that's all I do. I spend time with my daughter and my husband. But me and my daughter, she's like my best friend. We just do everything together.
It didn't look like what it sounded like there. To Sergeant Davis's husband. You're inspiring too, I guarantee it.
He is.
Man, right now, honestly, I mean, my students inspire me to come to work. I love pushing classes. That's just being a new person coming into Texas. I'm used to all East Coast and security forces, but just seeing younger NCOs come through my class and the things that they've gone through, and just you see on their faces when you're spitting knowledge. Like Sergeant Rivera probably has some of the best knowledge out of our schoolhouse. And I like looking at their reaction to some of the things that he says, because I can tell like, that might be an aha moment for them. Like, I think a lot of our students have aha moments in our schoolhouse, and to have the privilege to actually be the one to stand in front of them, talk to them, and see that light sprinkle in their eye, I eat that up.
That's it.
But to get away from Air Force, I am in a bowling league. So that gets me hyped too.
You're in a bowling league?
Yeah.
You got a 300 game?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely. What's your highest game?
248.
It's pretty good.
So the boss, I don't even know if I'm supposed to say some of these things that I say. That's why these editors, you got it. Legal has it. And this one isn't that bad. But the boss, Colonel Cooper, my new amazing boss, and I don't have to say that because I have to say that. I say that because you guys all know him and you've met him before. He's absolutely phenomenal. His son is on the, I didn't know the colleges had bowling teams. His son's on the college bowling team here at UTSA. So, I was like, what does he practice? I was like, they go to Randolph, they go to here, there. And I was like, I had no idea.
He's big.
My stepdad got kicked off the high school. He loves to tell a story. And this is probably, so shout out to my stepdad. He's like 700 years old. But he got kicked out of his LA football team or in high school because he turned pro as a bowler. Wow. I was like, in high school. I was like, I didn't know that was a thing. He's got his 300 ring and his 299, all these things. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't even know what that means. He used to be so proud of it. So now that I met some bowlers, I'm like, apparently it's a good thing. So, an easy question here. I have all kinds of inspiration that comes from a lot of different things. And I always think about, you know, like, oh man, I wonder what it's like to hang out with somebody. If you can have a dinner with somebody right now, and it isn't, don't think too hard into it, but I'm going straight to Sergeant Rivera because his eyes went way back there and he seemed like he had somebody. If you had to have, you can have dinner with anybody right now, living dead, who would it be?
Jesus.
Jesus.
Okay. Why? Just ask him why. What made you do what you did? And I don't know. Yeah, just Jesus.
That's.
You said anyone, right?
It's your story. It's who you want to have dinner with. What would you guys eat?
Ooh, what would we eat?
You get to pick the food too.
I guess fish. That's what he likes, right?
I don't know if that's going to make it on the podcast. I'm hoping. I hope we don't offend anybody.
For me, it would have to be steak. It's always steak.
What kind of steak? What's your go-to steak?
A T-bone.
T-bone?
Yeah, medium rare.
Okay. Okay. Best steakhouse in Texas or San Antonio?
Perry's. Okay. Down in La Cantera.
A lot of people. Okay. Well, now everybody's going to get some of those same questions. What about you? Who are you having dinner with?
So I'm in my Taylor Swift era. So
okay.
Taylor Swift, I think we would have a great dance party. It would be a good night with my daughter.
What if Travis Kelce was like creeping around the corner and just like, hey, is this dinner over yet? You don't want to hang out with Travis Kelce too?
No.
Not at all, huh? What would you guys eat?
Maybe Italian. I don't know. If I wasn't pregnant, I would pick sushi, but otherwise Italian.
That would, like, I can never be pregnant because I can never do without poke or sushi. It would never happen.
It's been hard.
Okay, I don't want to make this even worse for you. Of all places, San Antonio, I've had poke around this entire globe. Mm-hmm. San Antonio has one really good, I'm not going to say because it'll probably be some sort of endorsement thing that I want to step into, but has an amazing poke really? Store. Yeah. So when you're done, when you have the baby,
yes,
you got to go. I'll let you know. I'll write it down. And it is absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
I'll have to try that. We used to eat poke all the time when we lived in California. But then after that, we moved to New Jersey and you can't find any good poke.
We were stationed in New Jersey. There's poke in Jersey.
Really?
Yeah. Red Hook area, Tom's River. There's some poke. Okay. And then if not, you just like jam out to Philly. And we've had it also in New York, in the city in Manhattan. What part of New York are you from?
I'm a New York mutt. I live everywhere. At
Queens. You don't claim one borough?
Queens. That's where the rest of my family is at right now. So I'll claim Queens.
Okay. What's your favorite go-to restaurant in San Antonio?
I haven't been here that long, so I don't have a favorite. I really
Maybe you had one place who's like, that's pretty good. We got a support
Brazil, the Brazilian Steakhouse. That one was pretty good.
Which one? Is that the one on 281 or heading out or on 10?
Yes.
Is it?
Oh. I don't know the highways here either.
Sergeant Alexis Pumley over here, a fellow individual who's about to have a baby, knows all the Brazilian because her husband Damien, also a recruiter, ironically, that's his passion. I think we've talked, me and Damien, the other Sergeant Plumley, have talked about eating Brazilian steak probably 10 out of 10 times we've had conversations about food.
It's really good. Yeah. Fogo de Chao is really good.
Fogo de Chao is pretty good too. There's one right downtown too.
Texas to Brazil?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't been to that one.
Yeah, it's, but you got to pay the downtown prices. That's the thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And again, okay. I don't know if this is having to be edited out or anything. I don't know if that's going to be good. We got to run that by legal. I feel like I quit. Does anybody feel like a quitter when they have to flip that thing over to a...
Yes.
No.
I never flip it over until I'm like...
I was like, I just asked for the check.
Yeah.
And they're like, any more? And I was like, yes, of course. And I'm sweating meat out of my eyeballs at that point. It is brutal. Everyone's like, literally, we have 5-6 people in here laughing because everybody has done it before. And I put my maternity pants on when I go there. That's for sure. Some sweatpants. All right. Over to you. Who are you having dinner with?
I got time to think for it. And I think I think I would say Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even though he left the Warriors.
Kevin, if you want to be on the show or if you want to come to basic military training or you want to come see some recruiters and something in the 37 training, I will definitely show you. And I'm not super sad that you left Golden State, but I'm a little sad that you left Golden State.
Can we do a shout out for Taylor Swift too?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I missed the shout out for Taylor Swift too. Not Travis Kelce though. He wants nothing to do with us now.
Absolutely. But just fun fact is, you know, Kevin Durant, me and him went to middle school together. So
is there something in the water?
It is something in the water.
You got Michael Parsons. You got Kevin Durant.
Got it. It was just, we both went to Walker Mill Middle School in Maryland. And I would just like to sit down with him and just see, like, how's been your transition since Walker Mill? You know, I know you went to the NBA, but like, you never know the actual story and stuff. We just get to see the front line.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would be interested to kind of just see, because he's very, you know, controversial at times. Yeah. And I think his controversial is because he's truly being him, like
authentically
authentic.
Him.
And, you know, that's how I've navigated through my career. And, you know, I just want to sit down with them on, you know, chill and just play. Hey, how's that work for you?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about how it happened for him. Is that he's 7 foot. I mean, super tall.
Yeah.
You know, the boss, Colonel Cooper, my last two bosses have been collegiate level basketball players. So he played college at the University of Missouri. Mm. And so he's a ball player too. And I was like, what was it? You know, what was the difference? And he's like, you know, the skill sets, you can tell when somebody has it. This is his words, not mine. I'm paraphrasing. But he's like, yeah, there's a lot of folks who have the skill sets, but he said height is definitely one of them. He said you can find a bunch of great basketball players that are my height, and he's 6'3". Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, that height really kind of wins the day. And if you didn't feel that emotion of when he's the MVP, I know it honestly makes me sick. It made me sick when people made all those memes and all that stuff. I'm like, that is a beautiful moment between a young man and his mother. And you guys are going to meme that up. I'm like, the world is a very, very cruel place. And online media is definitely, definitely cruel. But yeah, so that's cool. What would you eat?
So I'm new here too. I think the best place I've had, and Sergeant Rivera's going to probably make fun of me, is Blue Lacy's. Blue Lacy's is, I love that
place. He didn't make fun of you, but he did roll his eyes. He's not looking at you anymore.
I don't know. I've been to a couple of places to eat, but Blue Lacy's is probably the first place I was like, I would come back.
What is that? I've never heard of it.
It's a barbecue place.
Is it really?
Yes.
We had civic leaders last night and we went to Rudy's. It was okay. It was pretty good. Sorry, Rudy's, if you're thinking that. I thought it was good. It was good.
Blue Lacy's in Castroville.
Oh, you guys go all the way out there? It's Castroville?
I live by there. So.
Oh, you live where? There was no, when I was here stationed here 18 to 22 years ago, mm-hmm. I did my 22nd to my 18th year here, way older than that. But I remember you go to Castroville and you're like, what are you going to go out there and push cows over? I mean, well, what is going on out there? Now this place is built up all the way to Hondo.
Yep.
It's insane to me. It's how crazy this place has gotten big. Yep. Am I getting the hook? Are you guys sending text messages like, shut him up now? No? Oh,
they're looking it up.
They are looking at food spots. And again, this Warhawk podcast is just us talking stories, doing things, and I want to share people's uniqueness and all the beauty that's in this room that could be shared, and all the influence that we have. It's an amazing wing. And again, I don't want to, like, you know, everyone's like, oh, is it going to be a leadership podcast? Is it going to be this? And I was like, no, we're just going to have conversations. I don't want to make this thing anything harder than it has to be. I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy hearing their stories and some of the other stuff. And the final question I'm going to ask you is why you stayed. Why are you still here? Because a lot of you could have got out, and some of you guys have answered that question, but why did you really stay in the Air Force? What made you come back?
I'm about to hit 17 years, and just what made me stay is that I actually got to do a job that actually put myself on the back end. I started doing a job that made me work and, you know, invest into people. I get motivated by just, I'm one of those people that, you know, I'd rather all three of us win an award together than me. And so when I do my part and we all get recognized, that's like kind of a joy for me. So I think right now, just kind of talking to students, and then they go and they're so excited by the most basic thing. I have students that just PCS to their new recruiting station, and they're just hyped off the first phone call. They're like, oh, sorry, Jefferson, my first phone call went like this. You told me it was going to happen. And when I hear that, it's like they're almost dependent on you. Like, I can't have bad days, because my students are waiting for my energy for them to get excited about.
You got energy too. You got presence and energy. That's for sure.
I might need
all you guys do. You guys have just like, I don't know, like, do you guys sprinkle that in recruiting school?
Yep. Yep, we do. It is.
And some Celsius and Monsters and Red Bulls.
A little mixer of that too. Not you though. No poke and no Monsters.
If you come to Kudos though, you'll see the energy there.
He has been there.
Oh.
Yes.
I've been there. My wife was shout out to Shauna. She loves listening to my podcast. She's rolling her eyes right now, I guarantee, when she listens to this. But she's been to Kudos too. So she went with Senior Gilly, and
you can feel
she loves it. Yeah. Like, that's it's it's so unique, but that camaraderie, that things that you have, especially as recruiting, it's just, it's almost like a family atmosphere. It's almost like this, and everybody wants each other to be successful. I really enjoy watching that as well. What kept you in?
For me, I am very passionate about what we do, not only in recruiting service, but in the Air Force as a whole. But what keeps me going is just, again, the impact we have in recruiting, where we change lives. And then now being at the schoolhouse, we were changing, you know, the airmen that are going to be the next generation of the Air Force that are replacing you and I. So it's, our mission is special to me. The Air Force is a family to me, and it just keeps me going. I'm happy to come to work every day, which I think is very important. You want to, you know, spend most of your time doing something that you're actually passionate about and that you enjoy doing. And that's my life every day. I love coming to work. I love the people I work with, and it's a good time. Mm-hmm.
Me too. I get to spend an hour doing a podcast at work. How cool is that? Mm-hmm. I love that. I think it's one of the best things I've done since I've been here. I get to have conversations and now I just get to record them.
Well, my first reenlistment was my commander.
Yeah.
He's the one that kept me in. Yeah. He took me into his office. He's like, "Hey, Fernie, what are you going to do when you get out?" I joined late. I joined when I was 25. So I was almost 28 when I was about to get out. He's like, "What are you going to do?" I'm like, "I'm just going to go back home to New York City." He's like, "Okay, cool." He goes, "How much education have you gotten?" And we all know that your first 3 years in the Air Force, you just party.
I could barely
Enjoy life, right? You're coming with something new. So no education. He's like, "How much money you got saved?" I'm like, "I got about $1,000. He's like, "Okay, let's do the math. How much is rent in New York City?" I'm like, "About $1,800 for a studio." He goes, "You don't even have enough to give a down payment for an apartment right now." So he recruited me back into the Air Force. And then after that, I grew up in the Air Force. I grew up that we have so much great stuff. Coming from being poor to what I have now, that made me realize how great it was in the Air Force. And then that's what made me become a recruiter too. It's like, I need to give this back to people. I need to find a way to just be able to help people out. And then after that, I mean, this is the easiest money I've ever made in my entire life. Why would I give this up? I get to work with great people, get to do stuff like this and get paid for it.
That's true. You know, I said that was going to be last question. And our sound editor and our producer is looking at me like, "Oh, we're going now." He's saying, no, you're good. This is going to be a hard question. But I don't want you to think about it, because when I ask this question, a lot of people get offended I got perked everyone up. A lot of folks think that they're going to offend somebody else. You can only speak your truth, and it's just almost rapid fire. So I'm going to start in the middle this time, and I'm not going to tell you who I'm going to go next. And I want you to tell me, right off the top of your head, it doesn't have to be the person of all time, but supervise or somebody who came into your life wearing this uniform that you look to as a mentor or looked to as like, you know, that person had one of the most significant portions of my life. I know he already said one, but we're going to come back to you on that. Who's one of the most influential people that you came across wearing the uniform?
Can I pick two?
Nope. See? That's what I say. You don't want to offend somebody. You got to pick.
I would say my previous supervisor that I had when I was a flight chief in recruiting. So she was my production superintendent. She held high standards for me, and she saw something in me that I didn't see myself at the time. And looking back now, I grew so much under her leadership. And I'm very thankful for all the lessons that she taught me. And I think it's made me a better leader today.
Okay. Going to you.
Oh, man. So it's funny that the first person that come to mind is going to be Tech Sergeant Erica Mims is the first person I think of. And I actually outrank her. It's kind of funny, but that is my mentor. That's the one that went through my phase where I had my aha moment at my 15-year mark. And so without her, I would not be as passionate about what I'm doing.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Mine is going to be, and I have several that's been great throughout my career, but there's one guy that's always going to, Master Sergeant Retired Kelly. He was my supervisor on my last unit, and he pushed me to be so uncomfortable to do things that I didn't want to do when I didn't want to do them. It made me a better NCO at that moment in my life. Like, he really forced me to do things I didn't want. He's like, go do this. I'm like, I'm not doing this. He's like, you're going to go do it. And I'm like, ah. And then after I did, I'm like, thank you. Thank you for pushing me to do something that I didn't want to do. That's made me a better person today. So yeah, retirement Sergeant Kelly.
I know a lot of people, when I ask that question, probably out there and anybody who's listening, even you, are thinking, why would he make me do that? Why would he make me pick one person? And there's a point I want to make with that. Usually one is like, make you make a decision. I love to watch people make decisions, even when they're hard. But the most important, my ulterior motive, and yes, I said it was an ulterior motive, is I want it, and I'm begging, and I'm hoping in my heart and my spirit, serving this nation for the last 27 years, that it was hard for you. I hope that those multiple people had come into your life and helped change and alter projection. My grandmother used to say reasons and seasons. People come into your life for reasons, and people come in there for seasons. And you've got to be able to distinguish between the two. All right, my final question is this. I'm sorry. I just keep going. I enjoy talking to you guys. You guys are awesome. How would I not want to hang out with recruiters? If you were in my shoes as a command chief in the 37th training wing, I want you to give me a piece of advice. You don't have to tell me how to do better, or you can do that as well, but give me a piece of advice for me and whoever sits in my seat there on after.
I could start with that. I'd be like, hey, just make sure you take care of Sergeant Rivera and his situation.
I somehow I knew you were going to say that. I was like, as I was getting ready to warm the question up, I was like, here he comes. He's going to come full, two guns blazing.
No, I mean, all reals. I think you're one of the first command chiefs I've ever met that's been so in touch with his people. I mean, I've been in the Air Force for 19 years, and you barely ever see a command chief. You find your way to make it to every squadron here, and that's great. So make sure you tell your whoever's coming after you to do the same thing. And what I like the most about you is that you are you. You're not a fake chief. You know, you get those people that give you the Air Force answer and all that stuff. You're a very honest person, and that's, I think, very highly appreciated among the airmen.
So be visible. So whoever comes in the seats, and for all the other command chiefs listening, and I, again, I'm not out here searching for compliments or anything, but thank you. Well, first, thank you. Thank you for the answer, and thank you for the compliment. It really does me well, and it makes me feel good. But being visible, and that's one of the things, is all my leadership thought process is being approachable. Being approachable is one, being visible for sure. And then be authentically you, even when you stick your foot in your mouth quite a bit, which I do on a daily, if not hourly basis. So, you know, be authentic and be out there and be visible. Thank you for that.
Yes, sir.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I love when I walk down the hall and I see you coming around the corner. It's, you don't ask for anything special from anyone. You're present. You're there. You're there to talk to people, to see how we're doing. And I love that you show up and that you're there for us, and unexpectedly so, right? So like the other day when you just showed up, I was like, oh, there's Chief Damon. Like, and it's always a pleasure to see you. We love having you. So just again, being visible and then also being approachable to where we feel like we can come to you if we need to talk or if we have any issues. And we know that you truly do care about our well-being. So that's very much appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
I'm a piggyback off the piggyback. I would say, Chief, the first, you're so involved with the base that I didn't even know you were the command chief. I thought you were just a guy that worked in recruiting that was just excited to be there. So I think it was about like the fourth time I saw you, I was like, oh, that's the command chief. Like, that's how involved you are. Like, it felt like you was almost a coworker. And I've never seen that ever in my career, even in, you know, in security forces or in recruiting. We barely see our chiefs in recruiting, and it's not even a shot at them. It's like, it's hard for them to be there, but
it is.
The position is just hard in general, but you almost like infiltrate. And, you know, it's like you have a camo about it. It's not like, hey, command chief is coming, everybody scattering, get to, it's just like you're there all of a sudden. And this is like, wow, I've never seen a chief that can just embed themselves with their people so well. The only thing that I would say that was different than theirs is I'm big on PT. So I hope the next chief is as big as staying in those PT standards. Like, that's the one thing that I don't want people to get away. Yeah. You know, that's my jam. And you are leading by example with it too. It's not like some chief is just saying this. It's like you work out and you don't just say I do it because they pay me to do this. It's like you enjoy it. Yep. Like, and that's how it should be. It's not a punishment. This is a fun time to get in shape
and keep my dog in shape. Cause everyone knows my dog. Like, I saw you with your dog. I'm like, yeah, come pet my dog. He's awesome. Great dog. But thank you. And the reason again, not necessarily ulterior motive, because again, I feel blessed. I feel blessed to be here, and I'm at your guys' feet, just at your feet. But with that is, I'm going to leave. I am replaceable. A lot of us are replaceable, and we say it in such a disdain, almost negative thought process. But no, that's the naturalness of life, is we're replaced. And, you know, we get better. And I'm hoping that when I ask that question to whoever comes and sits in the seat, I hope I'm talking to you. And I hope I'm talking to you. Because it's you, if you choose to or not, if you end up here or not, it's you are going to be the ones that I'm keeping the seat warm for. And the lessons, if I can give a lessons, if you know, and there's always the negative too. It's like, oh, but you do this and you do this. It's okay. That's the naturalness of life. And I hope that you understand that I'm blessed to be here, and I'm just keeping my seat warm, keeping the seat warm for professionals like you. So thank you for being on the show. I hope you guys had a good time.
Good day. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Cheers. Teammates, thank you for tuning in. For any topics, questions, or guest requests, please shoot me an email or leave a comment below. Thanks for tuning in. As a reminder to all listeners, all topics discussed are unclassified, and the views expressed by our guests and hosts are not necessarily the position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or any government agency.